We are concerned about variants. We're concerned about spread. We're concerned about the loss of life and also all of the secondary effects that emerge.
The United States restricts travel from India. It's Tuesday, May 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia bans India travel, conflict in southern Thailand, human rights, the core of U.S. foreign policy, COVID mental health, kids dominate YouTube. It's all on today's VOA Asia. This week, travel from India to the United States will be restricted as the South Asian nation is struggling in the grip of a devastating surge of the coronavirus. The Biden administration is sending supplies, but some ask if the United States should be doing more. Michelle Quinn reports.
As scenes of India struggling with a deadly surge ricochet around the world, the Biden administration is responding to the crisis. It is sending supplies such as personal protective equipment, oxygen, test kits, masks, and more. Travel from India to the U.S. will be restricted starting Tuesday.
We are concerned about variants. We're concerned about spread. We're concerned about the loss of life and also all of the secondary effects that emerge as this pandemic rages out of control in India.
India currently has more than 19 million confirmed cases and more than 215,000 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University's Coronavirus Resource Center. More than one-third of Americans are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, the disease caused by the virus. With some states saying they have enough vaccines, the Biden administration said it would share with countries needing help 60 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which hasn't been approved in the U.S. Public health experts say the U.S. should do what it can to help India and other countries that are struggling.
We've got to help India get this under control for a variety of reasons. The humanitarian ones, certainly there are geopolitical issues. But from a pure public health point of view, that large of an outbreak also is fertile ground for more variants.
Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, said on CBS News' Face the Nation, the U.S. has sent India enough of the raw materials it needs to make 20 million doses of India's version of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. Some U.S. lawmakers, led by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, say the administration should relax patent rules so countries can quickly produce generic versions of the vaccines, something pharmaceutical firms oppose, citing possible safety issues. The Biden administration will soon announce how we can get this vaccine more widely distributed, more widely licensed, more widely shared, Klain said. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
As India struggles with this latest coronavirus wave, you can read more by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. Find it as well on Facebook and at our website, voanews.com. You'll find these stories among the top Asia headlines when you visit voanews.com. India reports more than 360,000 new COVID infections. At least 26 killed after speedboat overturns in Bangladesh River. Philippines foreign minister issues expletive-laced tweet over China Sea dispute. New Zealand announces travel bubble with Cook Islands. Culture of abuse in Australian gymnastics, according to an inquiry. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by our website, voanews.com. We have more VOA Asia for you. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australians stuck in India could face up to 5 years in jail if they breach a COVID-19 travel ban to return home beginning today. Australia has stopped all direct flights from India in a bid to cut coronavirus cases in its hotel quarantine system. The travel ban will be reviewed May 15th. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us more.
This is thought to be the first time Australians have been banned from travelling to their own country, with the threat of civil penalties and up to 5 years in prison against people who attempt to make it home despite regulations. Health Minister Greg Hunt said the restriction will take effect Monday. Starting then, Australian nationals and permanent residents won't be allowed in if they visited India in the past 2 weeks. To enforce the restriction, the government is taking the travel ban a bit further. Any of Australia's citizens caught breaching the ban could face a fine of up to $50,000. They could also face prison under changes made to Australia's biosecurity laws. In the capital, Canberra, the government said drastic measures were necessary because of what it's described as the unmanageable number of citizens arriving in Australia with COVID-19. The federal government defended the decision, saying that it's about public safety. Treasurer Josh Frydenberg says Australia's political leaders have decided that a cautious approach is needed.
When National Cabinet met, they received the most up-to-date briefing from our chief medical officers. And their advice is that we need to put in place these secure measures with respect to people coming from India to Australia. So they're temporary, they'll be reviewed on the 15th of May, but they're designed, based on the medical advice, to keep Australians safe.
An estimated 9,000 Australians are stranded in India, critics say, and the Australian government is abandoning them as the pandemic reaches beyond what observers have called a catastrophe. Direct flights between the two nations have been suspended by authorities in Canberra. It's emerged, however, that some passengers, including high-profile cases, such as cricketers leaving the Indian Premier League early, have managed to circumvent the ban and reach Australia via Qatar, according to news reports. That loophole will now close beginning Monday. Australia shut its borders to foreign nationals more than a year ago as part of a strict coronavirus strategy. Australian citizens and permanent residents, apart from those who've been in India in the past 2 weeks, are allowed to return, but they face 2 weeks in mandatory hotel quarantine when they arrive. Quotas apply, though, and thousands of people have been unable to get home. Australia has managed to contain community transmission of the coronavirus. All reported cases, 21 in total in the past day, were detected in hotel quarantine. Australia has recorded 29,801 COVID-19 infections since the pandemic began. 910 people have died, according to official government figures. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, residents in Nepal's capital, Kathmandu, were forced to cremate bodies of COVID-19 victims in the open air as cremation space at temples and crematoriums have run out amid a serious spike in coronavirus cases. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. Thailand's southernmost provinces bordering Malaysia have been the center of insurgency since 2004. Over 7,000 people have been killed, mostly civilians, caught up in the fighting between shadowy Malay Muslim rebels and Thai security forces. But a new generation is determined to reclaim a space from violence. VOA's Wuitra Duongdi has more from Pattani, Thailand.
At the RISC Pattani Club, nothing gets in the way of skating, not even an insurgency. Away from global headlines, Thailand's southernmost provinces have seen a conflict between Muslim Malay rebels seeking autonomy and the Thai state. It has left 7,000 people dead since 2004, the majority of them civilians. But a young generation from the troubled deep south are determined to reclaim a space from violence.
Back in the day, there weren't many skaters, but now with the help of social media, more people are into it. Pattani isn't as scary as the media portrays it all these years. Most people who have come here to visit want to come back.
Thailand colonized the Muslim-majority Deep South in 1902. Insurgency against rule by the Buddhist Thai state has flared sporadically since the late 1950s. But it is not a war over religion. Instead, Malay Muslim locals accuse Thai governments of forced assimilation, of crushing unique language and culture, denying them a political voice, and carrying out abuses under the guise of fighting insurgency. Pattani, Yala, and Rathiwad provinces bordering Malaysia and parts of Songkhla have been under martial law for 17 years. The zone is a few hours from some of Thailand's most treasured tourist beaches, but it feels a world away, locked off by a reputation for bombs and shootouts, and smothered by checkpoints and security forces. Peace talks have drifted for years, and that has left the area stalked by fear of the men with guns. But the violence is low to a historic low due to a ceasefire called by the main rebel group during the coronavirus. The economy has picked up with the improving security, allowing cafes and galleries to flourish and public events to be held in safety. At this college-organized marathon, students say they want to banish the reputation of their home as a no-go zone.
I want outsiders to experience Pattani for themselves to find that it's not as dangerous as they think. If you live in the southern provinces, you find that security has been part of life for so long that it's becoming normal.
But the violence does persist. A suspected insurgent was shot and killed by rangers just a few days ago after bomb attacks in Rathiwad. But at this first craft beer bar in the deep south, owner Wasan says society is increasingly liberal and affluent after years of economic stagnation.
Pattani is very open. Be they Muslims, Buddhists or Christians, have long lived together in harmony. There's enough space for everyone to practice what they want, as long as we respect and love each other.
Their lives may be framed by violence, but a new generation is determined not to be defined by it. Flickers of hope from Thailand's forgotten conflict zone. Wichitradungdi for VOA News, Pattani, Thailand.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. The Kachin Independent Army, one of Myanmar's most powerful rebel groups, says it has shot down a helicopter after returning fire following airstrikes by the military. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to put human rights at the center of U.S. foreign policy. Human rights leaders have welcomed strong statements from the new administration, but say action must follow. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain joins us with more.
Harsh crackdowns on peaceful protests in Myanmar, Russia, and other places around the world tested the Biden administration's promise to make human rights a cornerstone of American foreign policy.
President Biden is committed to putting human rights back at the center of American foreign policy. And that's a commitment that I and the entire Department of State take very seriously.
Some human rights experts say President Joe Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken have struck a markedly different tone on human rights compared to the Trump administration, citing what they say is sharper criticism of China's treatment of its ethnic Uyghur minority.
The Biden administration has made this unequivocally clear that the Chinese government's treatments of the Uyghurs is egregious, and that the U.S. government will not turn a blind eye. So that is about as radical a departure on China human rights as we've seen. I think under the prior administration, there was not nearly enough attention given to human rights abuses, whether it's in the Xinjiang region or in Hong Kong.
Other experts also note the administration's global focus on human rights.
We saw sanctions on the International Criminal Court lifted. We saw the global gag rule for women's rights lifted. We've seen a lot of support for LGBT people around the world, support for civil society, and certainly human rights has been mentioned quite often, especially by Secretary of State Tony Blinken.
But citing the Middle East, Holowinski and other experts say there is still room for improvement.
There have also been some missteps. So things that are very practical and not just statements include arms sales to United Arab Emirates and to Egypt, two known rights-abusing nations. So we still have a long way to go.
Experts say while a shift in tone is important, the real challenge will be how the Biden administration attempts to make nations like Russia or China pay for human rights abuses.
Having Secretary of State Tony Blinken say that what's happening to the Uyghurs in China is a genocide is one thing. Trying to impose a cost on China for those actions while also trying to get cooperation from China on climate and the pandemic and other issues is another matter.
With the COVID-19 death toll surging in India and other nations, human rights experts say providing critical help is another major rights issue. They are calling on the U.S. and other richer nations to waive intellectual property rights to allow greater access to life-saving vaccines. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern took a tougher stance on China's human rights record Monday, saying it was getting harder to reconcile differences as China's role in the world grows. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a New York social worker and psychotherapist says more is needed to address the pandemic's impact on mental health, especially among healthcare workers. More from VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo.
Amina Woods is a New York social worker and psychotherapist who spent the last year helping clients manage the mental health impact of the coronavirus.
People are not well during this time. People are exhausted. People are feeling overworked. People are overworked.
That includes clients in the medical field who care for COVID patients.
There was a lot of appreciation for the healthcare workers and the work that they do, but I don't think that there's been enough concern about how the work that they've been doing has been impacting their physical health, their mental health.
Officials say it's a global problem.
The pandemic has taken a huge toll on their physical and mental health with devastating effects on their families and communities. Anxiety, depression, insomnia, the stress have all increased. I give thanks to those that have stood up in one of humanity's toughest periods.
Woods says she too is among those feeling the mental health toll.
I've had moments where I feel just disorganized, unfocused, anxiety, just living with anxiety like in the pit of my stomach.
The single mother says she's also seen an impact on her 12-year-old son, who, like many kids, has attended school virtually for over a year.
It's definitely taken a toll on his social-emotional health. I've never seen him, and pardon me if I start crying, but I've never seen him so down and so sad.
According to a recent study by the American Psychological Association, prolonged exposure to COVID-19 stressors is taking a toll. Nearly 3 in 10 essential workers in the study reported a decline in their mental health since the start of the pandemic. Woods says she has found ways to cope.
I feel like the deep breath thing might sound cliche almost, like just take a deep breath, but deep breaths really, really help. Sometimes if I'm really, really at the edge, I'll just go in the bathroom and I'll just cry it out, which is helpful. in this little bitty apartment. I started just cruising around, or if I take my garbage out to the incinerator, I'd ride my roller skates to the garbage chute.
Simple steps as people around the world try to push beyond a dark and trying year. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Videos of kids having fun are among the most popular on YouTube. They're also a fast-growing business, one that critics say comes with little regulation and oversight to protect children on either side of the screen. Michelle Quinn tunes in to find out more.
Ryan Kaji, the 9-year-old star of Ryan's World, has 29 million subscribers on one of his YouTube channels. That audience has translated into millions of dollars in annual ad revenue for Ryan and his family, making Ryan the top-earning YouTuber for the past 3 years. The rise of child YouTube stars represents a dramatic shift in children's content.
We're talking about millions and millions of views, children playing with toys, reviewing toys on channels, YouTube families with their own channels, interacting with toys and brands.
From its inception in 2005, YouTube has offered people worldwide a dream. With a camera, you can reach an audience. With families and children videoing all aspects of their lives, toy companies and retailers took note of an opportunity. They began to advertise on these channels or pay families to review their products.
They have direct access now to really young, potentially vulnerable audiences through these YouTube channels.
As part of a 2019 privacy settlement with the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, YouTube banned targeted advertisements and videos for children. Many YouTube stars with young fans saw their ad sales drop. U.S. government regulators have pushed online influencers to disclose when they are getting paid to play with toys and other products or have received them for free. That's not the only issue. There's also the question of what it's like for the YouTube stars. Few laws and regulations protect their privacy or their working hours. When Melissa Hunter's child became an adolescent, the family's Doll Review YouTube channel, which started in 2012 when her child was 8, became less fun. Caden was grappling with his identity as a boy. He wanted out.
He was concerned that I would freak out or be angry or be disappointed. And I think that is the reality for a lot of kid creators that are out there. What may have started out as something fun then becomes the family business.
For child YouTube stars seeking to make a change, there's another challenge. The archive of videos on the site lives on, finding new audiences, generating a steady revenue flow. Hunter put a privacy setting on her channel's entire video archive that featured Caden.
So that was his request for his 16th birthday. That did have a financial impact, but that wasn't not my number one concern. It was his, it's his right to privacy.
Broadcast yourself has long been YouTube's slogan, and millions of families have done so, with some children turning into stars. Whether this is good for children on either side of the screen remains an open question. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
It's been our pleasure to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks so much for listening, and come back again tomorrow. In the meantime, you can join us online. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our VOA Asia team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.